the weekly edition of the Federal Election Panel. This is something we've been doing since the election was called. We decided, you know what, on a weekly basis, it would be great if we could put together a panel of people who have maybe a bit of a different slant politically, but are all proud Saskatchewan people who want the best for not only our province, our country, and can come together and talk about some of the events that have unfolded, some of the promises, some of the platforms. And we've had no problem filling an hour of great discussion with our guests. And we have three guests joining us today. A little bit of a change in the lineup, and I'll explain that in a second. Joining us today, Doug Richardson, OF Council. Of Council or OF Council,
Doug? Of Council.
Of Council to W Law Firm. Former Prime Minister's Chief of Staff in Ottawa, Liberal supporter. And Doug, thank you for being here again today.
My pleasure.
Also joining us in studio is Kathy Sproul, retired lawyer, former NDP MLA for Saskatoon Nutana. Kathy, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Evan. Glad to be here.
And typically our third chair is filled by John Gormley. Well, John, I don't know, decided, I guess, he wants a holiday, and we were hoping we were going to be able to connect with him regardless. However, we had a bit of a last-minute itinerary change, and it wasn't going to work. So that doesn't mean we're without a guest. It means that we have Bronwyn Eyre joining us, former MLA, of course, Saskatchewan's former Minister of Justice and Energy, and a broadcaster as well before that. Bronwyn Eyre joining us by phone this morning. Bronwyn, thank you for taking our call.
Pleased to be here, Evan.
So let's start with, I mean, we're in the last week of the campaigns. The platforms have now all come out. We saw the debates last week. Actually, we had the French debate the night before this panel was on. The English debate, though, happened after we had the panel discussion. Let's start with the debates. Did the debates, and Bronwyn, I'll start with you, did the debates move the needle at all?
Well, they don't appear to have a great deal. I thought they might, frankly, but I think what we're seeing is the continuation of trends which were seeping into place, if you like, before the debates. You know, the drop in NDP numbers, which seem to be benefiting the Liberals, an increase in youth votes, you know, the 18 to 34, which seem to be stabilizing around the Conservatives, which is unusual. I mean, generally, it's not been the Conservative vote, which has been the youth vote, but that was emerging also before the debates, and we're seeing that continue. I think that the debate showed in many ways the lack of debate. You know, I think that Canadians were hungry for those two debates, and then blink, and they were both over, and I think what we're left with is the fact that throughout the election campaign, it would have been helpful to have had more debate because Canadians tuned in, and they were very important, I think, to have, and there it is. But, mm-hmm. but again, doesn't seem to have made an enormous difference in terms of some of the trends which were emerging before they started.
It seemed to me, Doug, that Mark Carney was much more of a target in the English debate. At one time, all of the other three leaders were really only focused on him. Your thoughts of the debates, and did it move a needle?
Well, first of all, Brahman, welcome to the group. We've been having a lot of fun with Evan and his team over the last little bit.
That's right.
Did it move the needle? My personal view, not. Could be wrong. My view is that this campaign is boiled down to four significant spots in Canada. And whether the debates impacted or not, those four spots would be what's going to happen in Quebec in five or six seats and whether the Bloc. And as you recall, as a group, the three of us agreed probably the Bloc should not have been in the English debate, certainly didn't add anything, and certainly it was frustrating to me as a Canadian when he said some of the things, Blanchette said some of the things he did. So, number one, I'd say the Quebec situation is very key. John has said several times on this show that there's 53 ridings in the Toronto area. If John was here, I would debate him a bit, and maybe Brahman, you will. It's probably down to 8 or 9 GTA and related ridings. Number three, I would say, is Saskatchewan. I think there's actually a bit of a horse race, whereas the last two elections have been a slam dunk for the Tories. I fully acknowledge, I think Kathy would agree with me, there's probably upwards of three ridings that might be in play. And the fact that the Conservative leader is showing up here tonight, in my humble opinion, confirms that. The last and fourth part of this election, and this is exciting. I earnestly believe the election, unlike previous years, will not be known until the end of the night because of British Columbia and the island and the impact on the different campaigns that are going on. It really is a three-horse race in British Columbia, if I was being fair.
Kathy, I noticed a noticeable tone from Jagmeet that night. I felt like even more so than the French debate. He was chippy. I'll be honest, I was frustrated sometimes with how much he was interrupting. Your take on that, is that the fight in him? Is that trying to help? Some people suggesting he was trying to help Mark Carney in that debate.
No, not at all. I would use the word scrappy, not chippy. Jagmeet is a fighter. He's fighting for what he believes in, and I think he's been that way throughout the campaign. I think the biggest takeaway I have, I'm similar to Bronwyn and Doug, I don't think the debate moved the dial really at all. The only change I saw in the polls was in Quebec, where Blanchette all of a sudden started climbing back up again. Mm-hmm. And it certainly couldn't have been from his performance at the debate. So I don't know what happened there, but that's the only remarkable or commentable change, I think, since the debate. I think Jagmeet Singh, and this would have been a strategy that he implemented in discussion with his team, and that was to come out fighting. Obviously fighting for NDP seats that we want to retain. But also I think he equally went after Carney and Polyev.
Sure.
And so that was his goal.
You know, Doug, just quickly, you said, I don't know if you remember, but all three of us agreed that the block shouldn't have been. Trust me, if all three of you agreed on something, I chiseled it into a plaque
and put
it outside the studio. It doesn't happen that often. So Bronwyn, I want to come back to you because Doug brought up the fact that, you know, is there the possibility of seats in Saskatchewan up for grabs, changing, if nothing else, a more tight race, knowing that we've got 14 blue seats today. Your thoughts on that, and is that part of the reason why we're seeing the Conservative leader in Saskatchewan tonight?
Well, potentially. I mean, we haven't seen him until now. I mean, I frankly don't understand any of this. I don't get it. But what can I do? I mean, I can't rail at the machine too much. If you know, this is in play, and some of these seats are in play, they're in play. I think part of the reason they might be in play is because of that that urban vote, if you like, some of the trends which we saw in the latest provincial election, where obviously there was a move toward the NDP in the urban ridings, and I can speak personally to that one, but I think that may be that some of the forces at play there might be leading to some of the forces that we are potentially seeing in this election. As I say, I find it very, very difficult to understand that. I think that one can, one can say that there has been a difficulty for the Conservatives, and I'm sure my co-panelists will disagree with this, but in getting their message across, I mean, most recently about this Privy Council report, as you'll know, this is crazy. This is predicting, you know, basic social economic collapse by 2040, people hunting, fishing, and foraging for food on public lands. And this is a Privy Council report. And my understanding is the Liberal leader has not spoken to this. Certainly, Polyev has tried in the last, 48 or so hours to get this across. It's a very bleak vision of the country, and then, as I say, I can't understand why. For that reason, for many reasons, I mean, let's not forget another one: the fact that the Parliament went into gridlock before all of this got going, and Trudeau stepped down over the Green Slush Fund, so called by the Conservatives for the Liberal boondoggle of allegedly millions in unaccounted for sustainability spending, inside dealing, and conflicts of interest. Why Saskatchewan might be flip-flopping in any regard, I don't get it, but there it is, and that potentially is why Polyev is visiting the province.
Okay, I'm going to jump in. Doug was shaking his head while you were talking about that Privy Council report, so I'm going to take a break. I'll come back. I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about the platforms that are out, and I worry, and I'm ashamed to say I don't know this, Bronwyn, do you have grandchildren?
I don't.
Okay, well, I know my two guests in studio do. And so I worry about a debt of $1.7 trillion, and I do worry that none of the platforms seem to be addressing it as substantially. I know there's talk about the conservatives talking about reducing it by a certain percentage, but I want to talk about that with our guests. It's the Federal Election Panel, and we will continue this discussion when we come back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the Federal Election Panel discussion, where we are joined by Doug Richardson, Kathy Sproul, and Bronwyn Ayer joining today because John Gormley not able to make the connection this week. Now, when Bronwyn was talking about the Privy Council report, I saw you subtly shaking your head. Doug, you don't agree with what she said. You don't agree with the report. What are your thoughts?
Well, lawyers have a phrase they love to throw around, and it's red herrings. And this is a complete red herring.
Absolutely.
Some official has written a report, and I think it's disappointing. I've tried very hard in your show I will not attack the conservative leader because I know how tough it is to be in politics, but I think he's just creating fear on a report that's written by a low-level official. Because of the nature of our country, Evan, Kathy, and Brahman, people will never go hungry. We're a caring country who reaches out to people in need. This is disappointing nonsense.
You have to admit that some of the wording that was used in that report was very provocative.
But yes, mm-hmm. I would acknowledge that the wording was disappointing, but it doesn't represent Prime Minister Carney's views on anything. And if that's what Mr. Poilievre was trying to say, I think he's missed the mark.
So, okay, and I don't want to beat this down because I do want to know, you're saying it doesn't represent Mr. Carney's views. Does it represent where we're at because of some policies that the current government has had? Is it an indication of, declining rate of university graduation rates or owning a house or those types of things? Because Terry Glavin wrote an article in the National Post basically saying this probably could be true for other places around the world and could be true somewhat today.
So this is the same government under Carney that's added an additional $200 billion to health care in the country, has confirmed that dental care, that pharma care will stay, and particularly has signed on to ensure that we have $10 a day daycare, and which something, by the way, aspects of our provincial government have vacillated on. So the only province not to sign on this, so that the type of care that's needed for you talked about grandchildren a moment ago, all of us have talked on it, the type of care that should be provided in this province and country. Listen, I've lived and worked in Ottawa a total of 5 years, and people come up with silly ideas a lot. You can't be dismissive, but really, let's focus on what Mr. Poilievre was using this report for, sadly, and that was to create fear when there was no need to create fear.
Yeah.
In fairness, I feel like it was brought up to him in a question. My understanding was it wasn't him that brought it up. It was brought up by Joe Warmington and a media scrum that they had done. I'm not saying his slant on it may not have been.
Well, shame on Joe Warrington.
Anyway, I want to talk about platforms. Liberals, NDP, and Conservatives now all have their platforms out. I've said it on the air. I teased it already this morning. I'm really disappointed. I worry about that debt, Kathy. Should we be seeing some sort of a plan, even if it says we're not going to address it now, that over a period of time, this is our goal in reducing or ending the debt?
Sure. I mean, we always should be looking at that in some way, shape, or form. I think for me, when I look at the platforms, it reminds me of being in the legislature and listening to the budget. These are basically fantasy documents. I heard 9 provincial budgets come down, and it was all about wishes and aspirations. I heard a commenter this morning talk, there's a French term, and it's pious wishes is how they describe the platforms. And I think, you know, when you see the kind of projections and the way the Conservatives have booked some of their future revenues, I mean, it is pie in the sky. So that's one thing, is that I don't put a lot of faith in platforms. I think they're political tools to push ideologies. Mm. And I think we saw that from all three parties. On the other hand, the deficit is ballooning. COVID was a huge hit for our country, as it was around the world, and I don't feel comfortable seeing it balloon even more. So our governments need to find ways to do that. But I think definitely taxation, tax havens, and things like that need to be addressed, and those weren't addressed substantively in the Liberal or Conservative platform.
Bronwyn, I want to bring you into the conversation. There are, of course, all parties pointing fingers and criticizing each other's platforms. The criticism for the Conservative platform is that it's basically too optimistic. It's overvaluating what investment might be. What's your take on that? Do you think the Conservatives shot too high, or is this a realistic view of what could happen over the next 4 years?
Well, I mean, I know they've talked a bit about, you know, foreign aid. They've talked certainly about cutting the bureaucracy, which has, of course, exploded these last 10 years under Trudeau. And they've talked about building opportunity. And I think that's not overly optimistic. If you look at the effect that scrapping the carbon tax on the consumer side has already had, which, of course, is what Paul Yever has been on about for the last few years and was shamelessly, copied by Carney, there is an impact on something like that, on the supply chains, on trickle down, quite significantly, which now we're suddenly hearing about and weren't hearing about for many years, when it was in place, that now it has an effect. I think when you look at some of the other policies that the Conservatives would go after, whether it's Bill C-69, whether it's the oil cap, and down the line, which Carney and the Liberals are very coy about and vague on, I think that it's not being optimistic to say that if you slash red tape and you start rock and rolling economically, that could help. But, we're in a fix here. We are in a serious fix economically. Productivity has plummeted and so on. And I think, to Doug's point about the Privy Council report, I mean, I'm not sure how he knows that it's a low-level official, but what is being put out there is, economic disaster, or certainly a very dystopic view of what's ahead. And I think certainly the Liberals would be, quote-unquote, using it if it were the other way around. But I think that one thing that politically or otherwise that everyone should be looking at are these reports which come out. I mean, this is one in a chain of internal government reports which have come out, which have had a very, very bleak prognosis on Liberal policies.
Okay.
I remember one coming out on the Green Plan, and it was similarly dire. So, whatever the case is happening there, I think that on the platform, it's really about redressing the situation we find ourselves
in. I'm just going to jump in. Doug, we got about a minute left before
So very quickly, you asked us to talk about debt, and any thinking person would say, Kathy summed it, I thought, nicely, because of COVID, $450 billion. But any thinking person would say that we have to start to address this issue. I spent time working as a chief of staff to two finance ministers, know the gravity of the situation, as does everybody. But one of the challenges I think we have is Canadians expect, and it's the reason I never got elected to public office, because I said this as a candidate, unlike Kathy or Brahman. I think Canadians expect too much of government, ask too much for of government, and Canadians need to ask themselves, do we need all the things we're demanding of government?
Mm, okay. We're going to take our break here. When we come back, a couple of things. Number one, we got into this topic. There was an article written recently about, for the first time in two generations, we're going to have likely over 80% of the vote going to two parties. And would we be better in Canada as a two-party system? I'm sure that you've got thoughts on that. We'll do that. Also, I've been getting texts from listeners throughout these sessions asking questions like, for example, Doug, what are you disappointed in the Liberal platform or the, the Liberal election campaign? Same, Kathy, with you about the NDP and this morning, Bronwyn, about the Conservatives. I think that's a cool question, and I want to ask it. And so we'll go there and a few other places in the last half hour of our federal election panel when we come back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Good morning and welcome back to the discussion. Evan Bray, along with our federal election panel, Doug Richardson. OF Counsel of W Law Firm in Saskatoon, former Prime Minister's Chief of Staff in Ottawa and Liberal supporter, joining us in studio, as is Kathy Sproul, retired lawyer, did some work with the federal government, then decided provincial politics was the direction to go, former NDP MLA for Saskatoon-Nutana, also joining us in studio. And filling in for John Gormley, who had a bit of a scheduling hiccup, so wasn't able to join us today, we have Bronwyn Eyre, former MLA, Saskatchewan's former Minister of Justice and Energy, a former broadcaster, and is joining us by phone this morning. We appreciate having all of you here. So this report, I talked about this on the air this week. It's been two generations since Canada held an election where more than 80% of the vote cast for one of the country's two main political parties, being the Liberals and the Conservatives. The last time more than 80% of Canadians voted for one of two main parties was 1958. John Diefenbaker's Tories, and before that we go back to 1930. So the question is, and we talked about this on the show yesterday, would we benefit from going to a two-party model in Canada? Any of you have strong feelings on that?
Can I go first?
Sure.
I do have very strong feelings about that, because I think we see the dangers of a two-party system when we look south of the border. And if you look to Europe, where they have multi-party governments and coalitions of all sorts, I think people behave better when they have to work with other people, and it just makes for better governance. So a two-party system is a dangerous road to hoe, and if we're headed that way, I think it's a dangerous place to go.
If you look at what we do provincially, and Bronwyn and Kathy, you both have experience with this. We had numerous parties on the ballot in our provincial election, but essentially we are currently choosing between the SAS party and the NDP. Provinces tend to have these two horse races more often. Bronwyn, do you have thoughts on this?
Well, I agree with Kathy, basically. I think that in this federal election, we're seeing a coalescing, and obviously those numbers coming down probably for the NDP, but there's no real reason why there should be two main parties. I guess it would suggest the Liberals are more with the NDP if it did, and, you know, that hasn't traditionally been the case, that the Liberals are the NDP, and to Kathy's point, I mean, in Europe, it's impossible in many cases to govern with all the parties there are. I know Germany, for example, with its coalition issue, it's dragging on and on and on as the government tries to find a coalition partner. I think no system is perfect, but I think that the way it is federally right now has served us more or less well until this point, at any rate.
Okay. I want to, do you have any thoughts on that before I move on, Doug? You're good? Okay. I've got questions for each of you, and each one of these questions is maybe forcing you into a bit of a, I don't want to say a corner, but an uncomfortable position to answer from, potentially. So, Doug, I'm going to start with you. And the question is this. What would you say that you're disappointed in that you've seen happen in the current Liberal campaign in this election?
Well, can I just flip it? It's your show. But
trust a lawyer to flip it on.
Well, just only because I think that there's been some positives that have come out of this from the other campaigns. I've said this on your show before. I think Jasmine Singh's idea of the bond is first class. And I think that Mr. Polyev was right about the capital gains changes to generate investment in this country. So the challenges for us in this campaign was finding ways to make sure Western Canada was heard. And I believe the leader has tried. He's from the West. We have so much ground to make up, to be candid with you, so we have to work three times as hard.
Now, ground to make up, why, Doug? Because of mistakes made, or just because of the history that Canada has, or both?
Well, if you go back to the 1980 election, unfortunately, no Liberals were elected from Winnipeg West, or East, rather, West, sorry. So there is some built-in history that the Liberals have had to overcome. The provincial parties have become, frankly, in Saskatchewan is a case in point, we have no provincial party to build a base. And the other thing that I think has always been is problematic for the Liberals in Saskatchewan, if I'll be candid, is that the government, the provincial government, has railed day and night, every single waking hour, and quite frankly, your predecessor piled on pretty hard on the Liberal government. They couldn't seem to do anything right when, in fact, they were making some contributions to this province, but there was no voices to respond to that.
Is that, and so I don't know if you answered my question really, Doug, but
poorly, obviously.
Well, and so
no, you know, not intentionally.
As a good lawyer would.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and so I want to get into the notion of Western alienation in just a second here, but I'm going to move on to Kathy. So here's the question, and it's actually some of these questions have been brought in by listeners. That question that I just asked you, Doug, yeah, for example, came from a listener. Here's the question. For you is for people who believe in the NDP philosophy, would it be better to have more New Democrat MPs and a Conservative government under Pierre Poilievre, or fewer NDP MPs and a Liberal government under Mark Carney?
Well, I don't like either one of those choices, quite frankly. I mean, if we had forced an election last fall, that's the former part of your question would be where we would have ended up. We would have had a majority Conservative government, but we would have had more NDP seats. Now we're facing the opposite situation that you described, and neither are comfortable, I think, for a parliamentary democracy where many voices should be heard. And I still think back to 2015 when former Prime Minister Trudeau promised a proportional representation platform that just dissipated the minute he got his majority. So, we need that voice. We need it provincially as well. I think two-party systems don't really work all that well because you're always dealing with a majority when you have a two-party system. So the only time the NDP have won provincially in recent years is when there is a third party. Mm-hmm. So obviously for the NDP, it's a helpful thing provincially as well. But I think that voice of the NDP has been incredibly powerful and helpful for Canadians in the past parliament, and I'm hoping that it will continue to be there.
Okay, I want Bronwyn to turn to you next. Here's the question. We talked about 14 ridings in Saskatchewan. There is the possibility of one or more being a close enough race that we may see it turn to a Liberal seat. That is unknown at this point.
Or NDP.
Or NDP, thank you. Should Saskatchewan be hedging its bets and electing a few Liberals? We complain about not having influence down east. If we do see a Liberal government back in running this country, is that something that would be better for Saskatchewan, Bronwyn?
Well, I would say no, because I think that it's important to, you know, have every seat we possibly can, if we're speaking on along partisan lines, for you know, the things that the West and Saskatchewan have found important. I mean, I think it's not, you know, to Doug's point about railing in the wind, it's about responding to harmful federal policies, and that is something that has been, you know, incredibly relevant to Saskatchewan and the West. And so I think that, you know, I'd be very surprised, and we talked about this, I mean, I'd be very surprised if there is a flipping in light of the economic impact of federal policies over the last 10 years. But I guess if there is some softening, it is, you know, those same forces which, you know, maybe changed some things in the last provincial election, you know, from an urban perspective, for example. I just don't see really why having, you know, a Liberal somewhere in Saskatchewan that will necessarily help us economically.
Okay, we're going to, you want to jump in,
just
Kathy?
Just a quick point. I mean, this is something that bothers me, is the notion that if we had a Liberal elected in the West, that they would better govern the West. Like, when you're elected, you govern for all. And that West, that government in Ottawa needs to look after the West. It doesn't matter if there's an actual Liberal voice,
right,
you know, perping up at caucus or mm-hmm. cabinet meetings. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, I want to, so we'll take a break, but when we come back, I'm going to start, Doug, with you, because I want to build on this notion of West representation. And I know you have said it. In fact, prior to being on with the panel, you said it one time to me that I hope the Liberals can find a way that reflect the values and the important issues in the West. You said just moments ago you feel like they have done that. I want to dig into that a little bit more, because this loud notion of Western separation, Western alienation, whether we agree with it or not, and I'm a guy, I've said it on the air, I do not want to separate from Canada. I'm a proud Canadian, but I also want to be heard, and I want to feel like we're valued from Ottawa. And so I want to dig into that a little bit and what that might look like going forward and ways in which that could be hopefully repaired. We'll be back with our final segment today on the federal election panel when we come back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back. The federal election panel is wrapping up. We have got joining us Doug Richardson, Bronwyn Eyre, and Kathy Sproul as we weed our way through what things have looked like over the last week since we last met. Doug, here's where I want to quickly go. We've only got about 6 minutes left, and there's a few things I want to cover. But you talked about you want to see the Liberal government better represent the West, or I can't remember how you worded it, truly show that they value the West. And with this whole notion of Western alienation, I think that's important. I've been disappointed a couple of times recently. I feel like we haven't seen a hard push on the canola tariffs. That, to me, is a missed opportunity. And this notion of becoming an energy superpower, but still having caps in place, not willing to relook at C-69, even some of the pipeline talk, to me, maybe not as strong as it should have been. Do you think the Liberals can do that?
Yes. And we have a change in leadership and a different approach, bringing somebody in who understands the superpower issue. I alluded to Don Braid, who's the well-known conservative writer, in what he said. Carney has done an exceptional job explaining with clarity a superpower plan. You talked about canola. Cody Blois is the only, and the CFA debate that was held 6 days ago, that's the agriculture debate, Cody Blois sent out a 6-point plan to deal with the canola issue. Little or no coverage on that. The Western Canadian alienation thing bothers all of us on this call. It's not what we want to see. The Liberals, with a Western Canadian leader, if he's fortunate enough to get elected, and we should stop getting ahead of ourselves here, because this race has become tight again. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Everyone's got a vote. But if they are fortunate enough to form the government, they do have a leader who is born and raised in Western Canada, understands the West, and has demonstrated that.
Does the large number of voters that we saw at advance polls, some 7.3 million in Canada, Bronwyn, does that indicate anything positive or negative for the Conservatives?
Well, I mean, one can certainly hope so. I think that whatever is happening there, there are voters galvanizing around the Trump issue, and I think that has galvanized people, and it's making them come out. It's hard to read the tea leaves on that one. I mean, I think that, you know, though I have to disagree with Doug, I mean, on something like canola and other things, it's heartbreaking as a Westerner to not hear a more passionate support for our farmers on that, when we hear such passionate words from him on auto workers, for example. I don't understand it. If we're going to go down this road, this is borrowed robes policy that we're going to be seeing, whether he's from the West, literally speaking, or not. He is not speaking like a Westerner. So I think this is obviously a very important time and election. I think that if the Liberals win, you know, we can wishfully think it's going to be otherwise, but there is going to be more talk of variations on certainly the alienation theme, if not the separation theme. And, you know, I mean, Premier Legault and Smith are proposing what's being called Autonomy Alliance, you know, a new era in Canadian federalism, you know, focused on provinces, focus on getting legislative bills through, which would include even the notwithstanding clause, that's Quebec and Alberta, to dissuade court challenges so that provinces can actually govern according to their constitutional jurisdiction, which we have seen under attack for 10 years. So say it ain't so, but, you know, this is a big one on Monday.
Kathy?
I think to myself often, what would this election would look like if Mark Carney had said no to the Liberals? We'd be in a very different situation than we are right now. If Chrystia Freeland, say, for example, was a leader, this would be a completely different situation. And so I know I'm a bit off topic here, but I just think that
I'm taking this personally. reworking the leadership.
Well, and, you know, well, you wanted to know what I'm impressed with the Liberals is the fact that they got Mark Carney to say yes, because I think that is a game changer for the Liberals, obviously. But in my view, Western alienation is being fueled by provincial Conservative governments. It's a political boon for Conservative provincial governments to have an enemy. And their common enemy in the last many years has been a Liberal federal government. And we know there are many examples of the Liberals supporting the West, and certainly I think BC would have a different view, and they are part of the West of Canada. So this is more an Alberta-Saskatchewan issue, and I think it's being fueled by provincial Conservative leadership.
The only thing, Kathy, I'll quickly throw out is Carla Beck has been very critical of the federal government also not representing the interests of Saskatchewan and Western Canada, oil and gas, some of those things. So
it's a good political argument.
Okay, we're wrapping up here. I want to know, it's the prediction time. Prediction for the outcome of the election on Monday. Who wins, and majority or minority, Kathy?
Liberal majority.
Doug?
I'm going to say this has become tighter. I would say Liberal minority. I think everybody needs to get out and vote, so it's the biggest turnout ever.
Bronwyn?
Heartbreaking to say it, but I think probably Liberal minority. I would also say that polls generally are off by about 4% for Conservatives. So if you tally that in, you know, you get awfully, awfully close, but I'm not sure it's going to be close enough.
Appreciate everyone taking part. Bronwyn, thanks for filling in for John today.
Nice to hear your voice, Bronwyn.
Yeah, likewise, Kathy. Thanks, everyone.
Bronwyn Eyre, Kathy Sproul, and Doug Richardson, thank you very much for joining us. It has been our federal election panel. We take a break. We come back to open phones here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.